A lot of people are dancing to the tune that they're being piped. You know, we're always counterpunching here. We're always waiting for a blow to come in from the opponent, and then we're reacting to that. We're bobbing and weaving, or we're striking back. Where's the offensive? All these so-called leaders and so-called governors, or, you know, rulers of the country, the presidents, are all compromised, and they're all bought and they're all paid for, because they're doing nothing to help the people of their respective countries. In fact, they're actively bringing them down and destroying them and running them into the ground. Read Matthew's Gospel, read the Gospels, read the book of Revelation. It's all falling into place. We are moving towards that beast system as we speak.
Welcome to the Staying Free podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Rick Munn. For those of you who have been listening to the podcast for a long time, I did an episode with Rick back in September of 2022, which is episode 37, called The New World Order, Prophecy and the End Times. I will link to that episode below. And in that one, we went down a religious rabbit hole, talking about all things related to the Bible and prophecy and how it related to the world at the time. And in this episode, we expand a little bit on that, and I get Rick's ideas on how that's progressed. And we also talk about a number of other things, from social media and whether the algorithms are in our favor or whether the algorithms are working against us. We talk about the situation in United Kingdom and Northern Ireland, and really Europe more generally, in terms of immigration and how that's affecting things. We touch on the war, and also we talk about the ways that Rick is staying free and staying sane with everything going on in the world today. If you enjoy this episode, make sure you give it a share and a like on social media. The Twitter algorithms really are not in my favor, so anything you can do to get the word out there is appreciated. There's a number of ways to support my work, including Bitcoin donations and fiat donations through Buy Me a Coffee. You can find links below for those. And I know that fees are high at the moment on the Bitcoin network, but you can give me a Lightning donation as well. Just head over to your Lightning wallet and you can send a tip to johnnyhoddle@getalbi.com. Or you could also tip me in Bitcoin using the Fountain app, which is available on both iOS and Android. Over there, you can stream stats as you listen, and you can leave me a boost as well, like these three boosters from the last episode. We have Piers, who boosted 100 stats with the message, "What you said about boomers is spot on." Yeah, I totally agree, Piers. The boomers have definitely had it much better than the millennials have. And I think that each generation needs to actually think about whether they are getting a good deal. And if not, then they need to exit from the institutions that aren't serving them. Axelrod boosted 101 stats with the message, "Good rip. I have heard that post before, but your monologue was spot on. Thanks." Thank you, Axelrod. And finally, my top booster, God's Death, who boosted 337 stats with the message, "Thank you, sir." Thank you so much for that boost, God's Death. All right, that's enough for the intro. Hope you enjoy this episode with Rick Munn. Rick Munn, welcome back to the Staying Free podcast. It's been a long time. I think we were just saying it was 18 months since the last time that we did this. So yeah, how's things been going with you?
Things are okay. I'm still muddling on, taking life day by day. September 2022 was the last time you and I spoke on this podcast. So yeah, a lot of water has passed under the bridge since then, Johnny.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And yeah, I guess, like, I don't want to give a full introduction necessarily for my listeners, because, you know, they can go back and listen to the episode previously. But I guess just kind of catching up from where we were before, you know, you've got your TNT show. That's obviously been going a lot longer now. I think it was, like, still relatively new when we first talked. But, you know, before that, you know, I knew you obviously from when you were doing your videos on Telegram and videos on Twitter and things like that. Just kind of definitely keeping people sane during that time, that kind of 2020 and 2021, when everyone was losing their heads, you were absolutely like a voice of reason, I think, that most people would say. And since then, you know, you've kind of become like a radio host. You know, you're really a journalist now. How's that process been for you?
Well, it's just, I've just been grinding it out day by day. The last time we spoke, it would have been 8 months in the job. Now it's 2 years and 3 months. So I'm literally taking it day by day. And, you know, I did a podcast with a girl about a month ago. She's been coming on Locked and Loaded for quite some time on TNT, you know, and she described me as a journalist as well. Now she has a qualification in journalism. I don't know that I would ever apply that title to myself. Maybe that's something we can talk about through the course of this broadcast or podcast. But journalists, real journalists these days, are few and far between, my friend. I would say at best, I'm just an observer I'm a commentator. I react and give my opinions on what I can see. I wouldn't go as far as to describe myself as a journalist. Maybe some people would, and I'm not trying to be humble here, but yeah, good journalists these days, real good investigative journalists, are few and far between. But I'm just trying my best, Johnny. I'm trying to keep a finger on the pulse of as many things as I can, siphon out all the trash, siphon out all the distractions as much as possible, and just try and keep the focus on what's happening in the here and now and how it's going to affect us down the line, and trying to, you know, do it with a little bit of humour and a little bit of black humour, to be honest with you, because if you don't laugh, you cry.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that the times that we're going through now really just, you know, warrant having decent journalists in the world. Like, we've kind of never needed, like, kind of authenticity in that area more. So, you know, it's really good that there's people like you who are out there kind of changing journalism. Because I think that journalism is going through a change, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on this. Like, I think that the, you know, what we used to think of as journalists, they've kind of been exposed. I think that anyone, and I guess it's not just journalism, it's kind of wider society as well. I kind of think that anyone who didn't take our side, certainly in my opinion, I'm probably not in the majority here, but anyone who couldn't see it for what it was during 2020 and 2021 has completely lost their credibility for me. You know, they're just not worth listening to. And that applies especially to journalism, because these are people who are supposed to be kind of conveying truth, you know, who are supposed to be actually, you know, the guardians of truth in a way. Like, they're supposed to be the ones who are saying, okay, we're going to get rid of all of the lies and we're going to present you the facts and have you kind of make your own mind up. And actually what happened during 2020 and 2021, probably even going on right up until this day, really, because, you know, they haven't completely retracted the things that I've said. I know they've backtracked somewhat, but, you know, even the backtracks, it's, oh, you know, we didn't have the figures, you know, we didn't have the facts, we didn't know the full facts. Well, me and you knew the full facts, Rick. You know, we were able to see it for what it was. So yeah, I guess just like reflecting on, you know, I guess your journey as a journalist up until this point, and just journalism as an industry so far, like, where do you think we are with it? And yeah, how do you view all of that?
Well, the only way to get proper, you know, completely unbiased journalism these days is if the source is completely independent. It's like, I used to be a financial advisor, and the only way to give completely independent financial advice was to be an independent financial advisor. If you're not tied to a bank, if you're not tied with a franchise to an insurance company, you can go to the whole market. You can give advice based on all the product providers that are available there. And by and large, the best type of financial advice, for example, that you could get from someone was non-commission based. So if I charge a fee, some financial advisors would charge a fee. So irrespective if you did business, you did business or you didn't, you got charged the fee. And it didn't matter what product you did or how much of it you did, you got charged the fee. That way, you were getting advice based on your circumstances, not the amount of commission that the salesman would be able to earn off of the back of your investment. So if you did life insurance, very profitable. If you did a stakeholder pension, not very profitable. You do a lump sum bond, very profitable. So a lot of advice, for example, and I'm using this as an example, in the financial services was dictated by the amount of commission that the advisor or the salesman would earn. You're finding the exact same thing happening with so-called journalism these days. A lot of journalists are on payrolls, especially if they're attached to mainstream media. So they can investigate just the best, but at the end of the day, they're going to have to toe the company line, or they're going to have to dance to the tune that their piper is playing, i.e. who pays the wages. So a lot of journalists that act like they didn't know what was happening over the last few years, or they're in denial, I think deep down they know exactly what happened and what is happening and what has been happening, but they can't say anything about it, because if they do that, they're dependent on their employer or their whoever they're freelancing out to paying them a wage. So therefore, they have to toe the line. Same with doctors, medical professionals, so-called medical professionals. Do you really think all those doctors in the world, only a handful of them came out and spoke against the narrative? A lot of them were silenced because of fear, the thought of losing their house, their job, their income, then their kids couldn't go to private school and they couldn't keep up their fancy cars and take their golfing holidays. So a lot of people's integrity is very much directly linked in with who's paying them and what they're being paid for. So that's why, again, back to my original point, good quality, independent, researching, investigative journalists are few and far between. And those that I would say you could go to, first and foremost, will have their own self-sustaining platform that they've built up over a period of time that they're not reliant on their paymasters coming from various media sources or big pharma sources. So yeah, there's not too many out there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess just like looking into the mainstream world of journalism, there's just such a rift now. I mean, I know it's a little while ago since, but you know, this whole thing with the WhatsApp messages, and you know, this was all big news. It was like, oh, Matt Hancock's WhatsApp messages and all this stuff, and it was just such nonsense. I mean, this is just like such a small, tiny side issue, if even there's any truth to it, and it's not just all a complete distraction anyway, which I suspect that it probably is. But it's just such, you know, who cares? Who cares about that? I mean, you've had governments essentially go to war with their people. You've had governments completely strip people of their rights. You've had, you know, the reemergence of fascism. I mean, why didn't we see during that time, you know, front page news, fascism returns to Europe? You know what I mean? Like, these are the kind of headlines that if there was any honesty in journalism, that would have been what we'd have seen, you know, and people would have rightfully looked at that and said, oh, wow, I really need to take stock of this. Oh, wow, I really need to, you know, go home and talk to my family about, you know, what fundamental principles are and what freedom is and all these kind of things. But they conveniently escape all of these, you know, or kind of omit all of these real issues and just say, oh, no, the real thing is, did MPs have a barbecue during COVID or whatever? You know, it's a complete spectacle. And I think a lot of people have seen it, you know, now for what it is. And I don't think journalism is ever going to go back to what it was. I think that now this alternative media landscape that we see ourselves in, that's the future now. You know, I guess that there's these moments in history that kind of mark this changing of the guard. And I think that's something that we went through. You know, obviously, it's unfortunate what we had to go through to get there. But now I think that people kind of recognize, okay, we're now in a new media landscape. Like, alternative media is the trusted media. However, and this is something I want to kind of raise with you and discuss with you, is I think that there's a lot of people who have kind of been brought in there, who've kind of been dragged in by the tide into this alternative media landscape, who are now being positioned as the new guardians, you know, people like Andrew Tate, you know, these kind of figures who, you know, in my opinion, kind of Tucker Carlson and all these others. I'm not saying that they're not saying some truthful things, but it seems to me that especially when you look online at the algorithms, you know, with Twitter and things like that, it's all about pushing these people to the fore. You know, if you want to grow your Twitter, you know, you want to go and follow people like Andrew Tate and post on all of their threads and agree with them. Or Elon Musk, you want to go and agree with everything he says. Or Tucker Carlson. You know, we're kind of being set up, in my opinion, into a kind of new trap where, rather than listening to people who you really trust, you know, people who you perhaps have a real connection, you know, I've got you right here and we're able to have this conversation, Rick. And, you know, I think you're a trustworthy person. You're someone who I can go to and say, okay, this is a journalist who genuinely cares about truth and isn't willing to, you know, just say whatever it is to kind of appease the masses and to kind of make money. But I wouldn't trust, you know, anything that, you know, I wouldn't trust Tucker Carlson to do that. You know, I'm sorry, maybe he's a real guy and I should trust him, but he's too far removed from me. And also the algorithms are too rigged in favor of people like him and what he's saying for me to really trust that that's the truth. I'm just interested to get your view on all that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, like, take one thing, for example, here. Take the WhatsApp messages. That's just one example. WhatsApp messages, Matt Hancock, they came out. Did they? Were they real? Were they not? Were they deleted? Were they not? A lot of people are dancing to the tune that they're being piped. So how often do you see people genuinely going out of their way to dig up some new content, not simply reacting to the content that has been placed before them to react to get their opinion on, to get their view on? Just think about recently, you know, all the shenanigans around the royal family in the UK, for example. King Charles, does he have cancer? Does he not? Kate Middleton, she hasn't been seen since Christmas Day. Does she have cancer? Does she not? Is that AI-generated photographs? Is it not? Was that a real video? Was it not? When's she going to be seen in public again today? Their son, Louis, it's his birthday. There hasn't been a new photograph put out on him since last year. Why is that? Something's going on. Are we not just reacting to whatever stimulus is set before us? If you can think about this as like a fight, you know, we're always counterpunching here. We're always waiting for a blow to come in from the opponent, and then we're reacting to that. We're bobbing and weaving, or we're striking back. Where's the offensive? Where's the offensive that's going on these days with the platforms that we have? How many people, let's be honest about this, I'm just speaking freely and honest with you here. How many people do you follow that actually go out of their way to dig up new content to focus on what's happening in the present or what's going to happen rather than, for example, do you remember what they did to us 2 years ago? Do you remember what they did to us 3 years ago? Yeah, it was only 2 years ago. Of course I remember it. Have you got no content? Have you got no originality? Can you not come up with something innovative to challenge me, to stimulate me going forward? Are you simply re-going over old ground because you've got no depth and because you have no content and because it's lucrative these days to, revisit the relative past to get the clicks, to get the impressions, to get your platform growing, to get monetization through the like of the Twitter platform. So very often what I'm seeing is a reaction to what's in the mainstream media. So we demonize the mainstream media, Johnny, but how often do you see people, all they do is spend their entire time online reacting to what's in the mainstream media and simply furthering that message even further amongst the so-called alternative community? So I don't know, I'm just getting a little bit cynical. And I'm getting a little bit jaded, even since the last time we spoke. Like I said, a lot of water has went under the bridge. But when you actually step back and you look into this, what's happening, the echo chambers that are these social media platforms, and ask yourself a question, what have they really accomplished? What is that person actually doing to broaden my understanding of a topic or to dig into something new? Again, and I'm not saying that I do this, by the way. I'm not saying this is something that I do. I'm saying it's something that few and far between you will find it, because there's a lack of real, genuine, in-depth investigative journalists out there. It's rehashing same old crap, no material, nothing else to go on. Get the clicks, sensationalist titles, and to do what? To get your followers up on Twitter, to get your followers up on Facebook. It's a trap. It's a time and an energy trap, and so many people have fallen into it, myself included. So I'm trying to rectify that as the months go on.
Yeah, totally. I think you said it best there. You know, in terms of how they're kind of using our emotions and just kind of stirring them up. And I think that's kind of, you know, social media is very good at that. It's very good at stirring up anger. It's very good at stirring up resentment and, you know, fear and these kind of things. I don't know whether it's actually just the way it is, or whether it's just that they've decided that those are the things it's going to push. You know, they always get so many more clicks. If you have, you know, I've got people on Twitter who are always putting out positive stuff. I don't know if you know this guy called Gareth Martin, and you know, he's been on my podcast. Good guy. He's always putting out really like motivational stuff every single day. You know, he's putting out, you know, pictures of him cycling on a beach with his newborn and things like that. And you know, really great stuff to kind of like, you know, this positive. And I always have to really search for that. But then, you know, what's the first thing that I see? It's always like, you know, doom incoming, you know, the prince is the antichrist, the, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And there's so many of these accounts, and they'll have, you know, or a picture of a celebrity, you know, they'll have some celebrity, and they'll be like, do you know about the dark secret of this celebrity? And there's not even any content there. I mean, you click on it, you look down, and it's like, oh, there's no information there. It's just an open question mark. It's got, you know, like 500, 1000 retweets or whatever. There's no substance there whatsoever. It's just something to try to trigger you to think, oh, you know, there's some big thing that's coming down the line. And I think that all that does is kind of paralyzes us from actually like taking action in our own life, because we're always waiting for this thing. It's like, oh, what's this big event that's going to happen? Oh my God, you know, what's this big revelation that's going to happen in the world? And I think that we're kind of like we're chasing this carrot almost, just waiting for this next thing, rather than saying, okay, like, how do we take everything that we've just been through? How do we kind of recontextualize the relationship of our kind of power dynamic between us and the government and the institutions and all these kind of things? Who do we trust? Who don't we trust? How do we build communities? Those are the important things. And, you know, I know that you know this because you're talking about it a lot on TNT. But, you know, that's kind of all sidelined, and so many people buy into it. They're like, oh no, I'm just going to like retweet the latest thing from Andrew Tate or whatever it is, talking about how we should, you know, all have like 60 children from 10 different wives. Because yeah, of course, that's the most important thing for the individual to be concerned about, you know?
Okay, let me be clear about something. I'm not against social media. If it wasn't for Twitter or X, I wouldn't technically be doing the job I'm doing at the minute, which I believe is, for me, the greatest job in the world. I wouldn't be talking to you right now if it wasn't for that platform. So it has a purpose, okay? It has a role, and it can be used for the good. I believe a lot of people have connected through it. I believe a lot of good relationships have been formed through it, and I believe that has strengthened us as individuals and small groups. So it has its plus points. But when I think about, again, the benefit of hindsight, looking back on balance, looking back even to the last time that you and I spoke, I'm thinking, well, what does all this time online really accomplish? What effect does it have for us? What effect do we have on the outside world? And what effect does the outside world have on us? And I would say, speaking personally, okay, the main thing that spending excessive amount of times on social media or alternate media platforms does is it weakens you. It weakens you. It weakens your body because you're spending more and more time inert. You're not being active. You're not out in the real world breathing fresh air. I'm generalizing here. It weakens your mind. Okay. I believe it destroys your attention span. I believe this quick hit, this quick dopamine thing, this click and scroll and using your thumb and tapping with your index finger, I believe it erodes your attention span over time. I believe you become, it's difficult to focus on things for longer periods of time because you're literally rewiring your brain to be existing in this alternate instant satisfaction, instant gratification, instant communication world. And anybody that's used social media extensively, maybe I'm just a one-off here, but I'm only speaking for myself, I believe it has weakened me something serious over the last 2 years, even 18 months since you and I last spoke. So my presence on there is radically reduced now. And I'll tell you this, again, I'm just speaking freely here. I reflect a lot and I try to map things and say, okay, I'm going right here and I'm not going right there. And this should have resulted in growth in this area, but it hasn't. 2 years ago, 2 years ago, I had a Twitter account, or an X account as it's now known. It had about 15 people following me. I started making those little videos. They seemed to be a little niche. They seemed to take off. When I look back at the videos that I made when I had a fraction of the followers that I have now, I don't get any traction at all anymore. I don't get any interactions, any views, any clicks, and I'm not doing anything different. Nothing different. The messages are the same. They're recorded in the same format. They're recorded pretty much in the same car. They're the same length. They're talking about the same subjects, but the traction isn't a fraction of what I'm getting at the minute. And then when Musk bought Twitter, everybody was encouraged to buy a blue tick. If you buy a blue tick, you won't be suppressed. You won't be shadow banned. You'll get further reach and so on and so forth. I was never going to buy one. I always vowed I would never pay for that service. I'll take it for free, but I'll never pay for it. And recently, because of the size of the account that I have now, despite the fact that I'm highly critical of Elon Musk and everything that he stands for, I got a free blue tick. So I thought, okay, my reach has been strangled and I've been shadow banned to hell over the last few years. That's going to change now. It's going to change because I've now got the blue tick. It hasn't changed a thing. It's no different at all because I believe I'm not changing to suit the algorithms that I know people are buying into. And I could do it. I could play the system tomorrow if I wanted to. I could start posting crap about this and crap about that because I can see other people getting a lot of traction on it. But I'm not going to do that because what does it translate into, Johnny? An extra few followers. I've no interest in monetizing off it. If you want to monetize off Twitter, you need, 3-5 million impressions over a 3-month period. And even then, you'll be lucky to make a couple of $100 off that. And I sit and look at things in the balance going, well, do I really want to invest an extra 5 hours of my day being online to earn a couple of $100 off Twitter? Or do I want to get out there in the real world, preserving my mental health, working on lengthening my attention span, breathing fresh air, walking by the coast and enjoying real life relationships with real people? No, it's not worth the free blue tick and it's not worth the couple of $100 every few months to be a whore for ex Elon Musk or Twitter. No, thank you very much. So I just see a lot of people sucked into that trap. And the worst thing is, and I'm just, I hope I'm not, I don't even know if I'm still on point here. I'm still answering the question that you asked.
You go ahead.
I'm just speaking freely. I see this as a real problem with people. It's an addiction problem. Some people can't handle it and some people can't. And you find, you can see actually people disintegrating. You can see them losing their minds. You can see them losing their shit. And then they'll say, I need a break. I need a break. I'm going to disable my account. I'm going to go away. And then they go away and then they come back again. And they say, right, I'm sorted out now. I'm back. I say, why did you come back? You have an issue with this. It's destroying your mind. It's like an alcoholic. An alcoholic can't say, I'm taking a break from alcohol and I'm going to come back in 3 months and I'm only going to have 2 beers a day. Listen, if it's destructive and it's controlling your life, you have to make the break from it completely. You can't be a drug addict that does 2 lines of cocaine once a month. You know what I mean? You can't be a porn addict that spends 1 weekend a month on Pornhub. You can't do that. If it's destructive, you have to get away from it completely. And I'm seeing people sucked into that quagmire where they're talking all the time about their mental health is destroyed, but yet they still continue to expose themselves to the stimuli that's destroying their mental health in the first place. And that's just another aspect of why I believe this whole setup is just so bad in whole. If you put it in the balance, what I'm trying to say is there's good points and bad points with everything. But if you put this whole social media, alternate media scene in the balance, the negative by far and away outweighs the positive, in my opinion, in my humble experience. And I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I've built a platform up. And in reality, when I look at it now, I went, for what? For what? Mm-hmm. I have to ask myself a lot of questions. Is it worth this price, and this price? No. It's not, so I'm trying to rectify it. I'm a work in progress, Johnny. What can I say? I'm a work in progress.
Well, I think like so many things in life, you know, social media and Twitter and all of these kind of things, that there is always a positive and a negative side. And it just depends on your own ability to have kind of self-control. I think that's true for just so many things. You know, you can have, you know, the internet and you can do great things like go on there and learn new things and learn new skills and make new connections and all the rest of it. Or you can go in and, you know, watch like violent videos or watch porn all day or whatever it is. There's always, I think with, especially with technology, there's always a kind of a good and a bad side. And I feel like actually my relationship has got increasingly healthy with Twitter. Maybe I'm a rare case in that sense, but you know, I used to go on there and be like, oh God, you know, there's so much stuff that I want to look at and it's just a wealth of information. Now I go on there and I'm just like, there's nothing here. I mean, I spend half my time just muting accounts because they're just posting nonsense and saying, oh, you know, all will be revealed this week or whatever. And I'm just like, okay, yeah, I've seen that a million times. Mute the account. And I'm just trying to find the good stuff. I mean, my only kind of complaint with it, like I said, is I have to actually really seek out any positive stuff from it. But I don't feel like it's sucking me in because so much of it is nonsense anyway. And I mean, you know, like I've made some great connections on there. Like recently, actually, I don't know if you know, because I know you're also friends with Parallel Mike. And and I went to visit Mike in Poland recently, and you know, we got together, and you know, we like went and saw his farm and stayed there. And we had a great chat. We did an episode there. Those kind of things, you know. They kind of prove like these things can be used for good, but you have to keep yourself in check more than anything. You know, the platform will kind of go with your worst intentions or your best intentions, but you have to be willing to kind of be in control of it and not allow it to kind of drag you down these dark paths where it wants to take you. And I guess just kind of on that point more generally, because I know that you're a you know, you're a man of faith, and our first conversation, there was a lot of talk around that. Do you also kind of see these, I guess the dark and the light in a lot of stuff? Because this is something that I've kind of been more aware of since our last conversation, is just seeing that kind of dichotomy play out in a lot of things, seeing that polarity almost, you know, in everything. You know, most recently for me, it's been AI. You know, I've looked at AI and I've kind of gone, okay, I can see that this can be a really bad thing, but if I keep it in check and I use it for the right purposes, it can be good. But you could also just give away all of your creativity or whatever to it and just say, I'm never going to do a creative thing again because I'll just use it for everything and I won't even use my own kind of cognitive capabilities. I'll just export it out to AI. I mean, I guess I'm rambling a little bit away from the point, but just as a general concept, that kind of necessity to keep yourself in check and not to be kind of dragged around by these technologies, it seems to be a big theme.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you make a good point. Not everybody's going to be wired up that they're going to be sucked into the social media vortex and, you know, end up losing their mind over it. I didn't mean that everybody would, in the same way that some people have a gambling addiction. Some people wouldn't think twice about gambling. Some people might put a bet on once in a blue moon. They never felt like they're going to put the house in anything and they're going to risk their salary over it. But the people that don't gamble, for example, might have a drinking issue. And the people that have a gambling issue might not have a drinking issue. We've all got things. We've all got things that we are susceptible to. And the point that I was trying to make is some people are very, I believe there's a lot of escapism happening in the world right now. You know, people are looking for escape. They're looking for escape from the mundaneness sometimes of their everyday life or from a stressful relationship. They want to be something that they're not, and they maybe see an avenue for that being, you know, being online more. They can be a different person online. What I'm trying to say is, everybody has buttons, and a lot of people I'm seeing, and sadly have seen, a lot of people are having their buttons pushed by social media providers. They're almost being sold this dream. You're going to be famous. You could make a living off of the back of this. You could be an influencer. You could be a famous person. You could make a living out of this, and you can. You can, but it's once in a blue moon. The amount of people that succeed in doing that versus the amount of people that will never do that but are still constantly chasing that carrot is unbelievable. And that's the danger. You have to manage your expectations like with everything else in life. So some people can take or leave social media. I don't think you use it excessively. Johnny, from what I've seen from your account, you post on there the odd time. You put links up here and there, but you're not on there morning, noon and night. Post, 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 repost, repost. Repost, reply, 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 spam, spam, spam. If you're in that position, you most definitely do have a problem. If you hop onto it for 10 minutes a day, you do what you need to do, you get off and you check it again tomorrow morning, I don't think there's any harm in that. But sadly, a lot of people are getting sucked into going way beyond that. And I believe it's affecting their physical health, their mental health, their spiritual health, and their financial health. It's detrimental in so many levels. I suppose it's just like everything else. You got to manage it, make sure you do it in moderation. And if you can't do that, no matter what that medium is, then you should not be on it. It's like I said, I use this as an example. Alcoholics, they can't just manage it. They either have to stop drinking or the drinking finishes them off. That's the way it is. The relationships continue to be in a mess. It's continued negativity. They can't say, well, I'll do it once in a while, or I'll have one drink a month. You can't do that. And that's an extreme example, but I believe we're seeing more and more people sucked into this social media quagmire, this internet quagmire, and they're being preyed upon by these providers. And it's easy to say, just step back, just take a break. But if you've ever had an addiction with something, if you've ever wrestled with something, and I know I've wrestled with things in the past, you can't just walk away from it. That carrot will always be dangled in front of you to get you back in again. And it's always for the other person's benefit or the provider's benefit, never your own. So I'm urging a little caution. Be honest with yourself, check yourself, look at yourself in the mirror and say, is this doing me good? Am I in control of this? Or is this in control of me? You have to be honest with yourself. And if the answer to that's, well, it's controlling me, then you have to stop. You have to quit by whatever measure needed. And you have to walk away to preserve your own physical, real identity rather than this online, you know, pseudo identity that so many people adopt.
Yeah, more people need to actually take a step back and think of things in those terms, because we are, you know, society tells us, okay, watch out for how much you drink, or watch out for, you know, doing drugs and these kind of things. But when it comes to social media, there's just not that much kind of awareness that this is an addiction. And it's exactly the same. You know, you are just having these little, you know, shoots of dopamine going into your brain that, you know, it's exactly the same as gambling or any other addiction. That is what it is. You just, you know, we're just not as socially aware of it. But I think that it will happen at a certain point. I mean, people more and more are talking about, okay, I don't want to have my kids using these things. I mean, you know, if I had kids, I would not want them on Twitter and things like this, you know, until they're actually mentally prepared for it. Because, you know, giving these kind of things to kids especially, it's a recipe for disaster in my view.
And don't forget, but adults can't handle it. If adults can't handle it, how much more are kids going to handle it? And on that note, again, I can only speak for the world that I inhabit, but when I go out and about now, and I live in a small, well, supposedly a city, but it's a large town, the place that I live in now, if I go out into anywhere, Kids are on mobile devices. Couples are on mobile devices. Women pushing prams are on a mobile device while they're pushing the pram with the other hand. Or husbands or men are pushing prams with their mobile in one hand. Grannies, pensioners, they're on the devices. It's like they can't stand still. They have to be checking that damn thing every 10 seconds. It's something that's almost being hardwired into people's minds. And that's tech. That's what it does. It's an incremental thing. I've always been into video games since I was a kid. I can remember back in the late 70s getting an Atari, you know, game system. It was made of wood. It was made of wood, mahogany, and little metal pulls on it. You used to play Space Invaders on it. Then it went to a Commodore 64, a home computer, where cassette tapes, the games were loaded up on cassette, and they made funny noises as they were being uploaded onto your little computer, and you sat with a little joystick, and there was little block graphics, and then Nintendo came along, then Super Nintendo came along, then Xbox came along, then the internet was integrated with Xbox Live, then online gaming was opened up to people, and then connectivity came through the internet, and I'm looking with the benefit of experience and hindsight here, Johnny, but look at kids these days, generally speaking, compared to what they were back in the 70s and 80s and early 90s in terms of their activity, obesity levels, mental health crises and everything else. You can't say that it's solely down to the internet, but let's be honest, look at the role being online has played in the development or lack of development in children's minds and the state that they're in today, partially, if not largely, because of, for example, the internet. So it sounds almost ridiculous that I'm talking about this because we're online now, we're talking online now, but once this conversation's over, I'm getting the hell offline. And before I came on with you, I got the hell offline and I went and I walked along the coast. So managing it is very important rather than letting it manage you.
Yeah, I wonder as well whether, because I guess like technology has changed so much and I kind of, you know, and you no doubt did as well, had an era of your childhood where technology was just not a thing. You know, I mean, you didn't have a mobile phone, you didn't, nope, you know, you didn't even have any kind of video games or whatever. And then I guess we were kind of like eased into it a little bit. Like certainly for me, there was time when I had nothing. And then I had a very, very basic thing that, you know, there wasn't even that many games for it. You know, like when I first got the Sega Mega Drive, it was like, well, there's hardly any games out there. So yeah, there's not that much stuff to play. So you finish playing a game and you go, okay, cool, I'll go out and play football now. And I guess maybe that was helpful. Whereas now, like people that they're straight on the smartphone, they're straight on the iPad or whatever. It's like you go from 0 to 100. Kids are getting given an iPad at like 3 years old, and there's all this stimulation. And you know, maybe it was a kind of a blessing actually that we were able to, like, technology kind of scaled with the course of our life in a way. You know, maybe there's something there.
Listen, I'm feeling very nostalgic at the minute, okay? And I'm a little bit older than you are, probably a good bit older than you are. So all I'm doing is I think now a lot, I'm listening to a lot of 80s music. I'm listening back to watching movies that were made in the 70s, the 80s, whenever I believe was the golden age of cinema. And I'm looking at the tripe that's being pumped out now. It's all, there's no script. For me, a good movie needs a good actors. It needs a good script and it needs a plot. I'm not seeing any great new actors coming through the books. I'm not seeing any movies with plot being put out there at the minute, or with a good script. It's all AI centered, you know, bubblegum stuff, popcorn stuff, go to the cinema, sit with everybody else and watch the latest Marvel adaption because they can't come up with any new ideas, or having to trawl through and pick up titles from the 1960s and 70s that Stan Lee made. And, you know, they've exhausted most of those, so they're now scraping down to try and find anything they can, a character, because they can't come up with anything innovative. And people run out and consume that. I don't know if it's me or if it's a generational thing, but I mean, I can remember getting my first mobile phone. I got my first mobile phone in 1998. And at the time, it was innovative. There was no internet then. It was just a phone. And I still have the same mobile number now as I did in 1998. I never changed my number. But back then, it had a screw-on aerial. And I remember the guy selling me it. And he said, you know, you can text people with this as well. You can send a text message. And I never forget asking, what the hell would I want to text someone for on a phone? If I want to have a phone, then I'm going to phone them and I'm going to talk to them. Why would I sit and type a little message in to the phone? Unknown to me that the future of communication would be, if you've got a phone now and you look at the amount of free minutes that you have, my contract is like 5,000 free minutes, 5,000 texts, and I don't know, unlimited internet usage. I don't spend any more than 5 minutes out of my 5,000 minutes talking to people now. But if I look at my text usage, you know, it's through the roof. Now, why is that? Why would you want to text someone when it's easier to lift the phone and talk to them, unless we're slowly being reconditioned and hardwired to move away from direct communication with people that involves a little bit of mind power and a little bit of emotional investment to the cold, calculating text, which you can make seem a little bit more human with emojis? And when, remember emojis when they came out? It used to be a smiley face or a sad face or maybe a heart. You go onto your phone now, whenever you come off this interview, and you look up your emojis and ask yourself, why are there thousands and thousands and thousands of emojis and a GIF library now that you can select a GIF, happy anniversary with a balloon on it, or happy birthday with Snoopy? Ask yourself, Johnny, why the proliferation in things that remove our need and ability to communicate directly with each other if it's not reprogramming our minds? You answer me that if you get a spare moment after the show.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rick. I'd not necessarily kind of looked at it that way, but yeah, that is, it definitely does do that, doesn't it? Like emojis, it's just designed to, like, you know, you package up your emotions and you put it in an emoji, yeah, and then it's like, boom, that's what you send. And that's going to, yeah, stop you from calling someone up and saying, oh, you know, I really appreciated the flowers you sent me or whatever. Now it's just like flower emoji, heart emoji, thumbs
the little
up
hands
emoji
together and the thumbs up and the little balloon with, you know what I mean? Now, seriously, that's just, and we're making a light of this, but ask yourself why you need a library of animated emojis when never even mind texting someone, thank you very much for that lovely bunch of flowers. What about physically calling someone? And the phone as well. How often do people call you up just to see how you're doing and to ask if they can help you out in any way, shape or form? How often do you get a phone call that has no agenda? Someone just says, hey, Johnny, it's been a long time, man, since we last spoke. I'm just checking in to see how you're doing. How's the podcast going? How often do you get that versus, hey, Johnny, can you come on my show? Hey, Johnny, can I come on your show? Hey, Johnny, did you get this? Hey, Johnny, what do you think? How often do we actually communicate with each other simply to give a damn about how the other person's going rather than to take something or request something? Generally speaking, I'm talking about generally speaking, maybe that's why we don't use the phone so much anymore, because when that thing rings, see, when this thing rings of mine, I don't answer it. Do you know why I don't answer it? Because 99.5% of the time, it's somebody wanting something or to dump a lot of shit in my lap or to drain me dry emotionally, physically, or mentally, or spiritually. Yeah. So it's easier just to give an emoji going, thumbs up. Maybe I've answered my own question here.
All right, Rick. So, let's talk a little bit about kind of current events and what's going on, because, you know, you're talking about it every day on your show on TNT, but I'm kind of not too in the loop, and especially not in the loop with what's going on in the UK and Ireland. So what are the things that you're talking about most at the moment in terms of, yeah, everything going on over there? What are your kind of biggest concerns, I guess?
Well, what I try and focus on is what I know to be absolutely true, and the evidence that I'm seeing with my own eyes and that I'm hearing with my own ears. And in the UK and Ireland, for example, at this point in time, mass illegal and legal migration, immigration are the big ones. Ireland specifically at the minute, the borders are effectively opened up. People are being brought into the country by the tens of thousands and, you know, hundreds of thousands, actually. And Ireland's not a big place. You know, population total is only about, you know, 6 or 7 million or whatever it happens to be. So per capita, we're taking a lot on at the moment, and there's literally nowhere to put anyone. So there's 10 to 12,000 Irish people are currently homeless at the minute, and yet they're bringing in 100, 200,000 people from allegedly Ukraine or various parts of the world. They're fleeing from persecution. They're refugees, asylum seekers, internally displaced people. And where are they going? They're being, modular homes are being built. They're being put into towns and villages, rural communities. They've got no work. Many times they can't speak any English, no economic contribution whatsoever, putting strain on schools where there are children, on doctors, on dentists, infrastructure in general, destroying the tourist industry. Ireland's a very big tourist country, so, you know, a lot of tourist towns, there's no accommodation anymore because they've been bought up and they've been block booked for asylum seekers or refugees, and the locals aren't happy. There's a lot of milling around, a lot of loitering around, and I know there are people that come into the country and do work. I know there's a lot of people who are genuinely fleeing from war and persecution, but the point is that people that are in need here, our own indigenous people, are being completely overlooked and stepped over to accommodate people coming in from other places. So that's a big thing at the minute, and that's not something I'm imagining. It's not some kind of crazy, you know, possibility that might happen somewhere down the line if certain people get into power. This is happening today. This is happening here and now. It's having a knock-on effect on housing. It's putting the price of houses through the roof. The availability of decent rental accommodation is almost non-existent right now, and as a result of that, a lot of people are leaving Ireland simply because they don't see any future here. And as they leave, the labour drain is then being supplemented by more people coming in from overseas allegedly to work. So I can see us in a very vicious cycle in that respect. And it's not just here. It's happening in England, in Scotland, in Wales. Look at America. Look at the southern border in America. There's very few places these days that have a strict border policy. Johnny, I know Poland and Hungary and even Mexico. I know it's particularly difficult for me to just rock up to Mexico and say, right, I want to come and live here. There's things that I have to do before I can do that, and I have to show that I'm going to be financially viable. So some places are serious about policing their borders, other places are throwing them wide open, and the ones that throw them wide open, I believe they're going into terrible decline at the minute. So that's one thing that I'm covering a lot of. Obviously, war is never too far away. The last time you and I spoke, we had the Ukraine-Russia special military operation, is what they call it. Nobody had talked or thought about Israel-Palestine at the time. Now we have that happened in October the 7th in 2023. Now Iran's on the verge of being pulled in. There's still talk of war with China, Taiwan. Volatility's everywhere. Even civil war within America's being mooted around because, let's face it, that country has gone completely to the dogs under Biden. You know, some people would say, well, you know, Trump didn't do them any favors either. The bottom line is, under the Biden administration, America's shot to bits, and I don't know if it's going to recover from that. And when it does fall, not a case of if, but when it does fall, the destruction and devastation on society, on homes, on jobs, on the economy is going to be cataclysmic. Who knows? Who knows how that will end up? So that's another thing to bear in mind. And, you know, that applies to Australia, New Zealand as well. I don't cover Africa, the continent as such, but I do have a lot of guests on from South Africa, try and monitor what's going on there as well. Different parts of the world, in France, people from Italy as well. And the stories are similar, Johnny, right across the board. And I'm sure, you know, it's slightly different. Are you still in Mexico, are you?
Yeah, for now I'm still in Mexico, yeah.
Yeah, well, I would say it's better there. I would say, I used to joke to Parallel Mike, you know, he left England to go to Poland because he thought it would be a good move, and then the Ukraine conflict broke out and he's talking about moving. So I have it in my mind that he'll end up in Mexico with you someday, and Hervoye Morich being another one. All the smart people seem to be going to Mexico. Hell, I might even go there myself. Next time we talk, we could be on a beach somewhere sipping on a tequila, maybe in your case, and a Diet Pepsi in mine.
Yeah, well, I remember last time we talked, we did discuss having a little kind of HQ of content creators and podcasters and journalists out here. But yeah, you know, I mean, Mexico does seem to have sound policies. I mean, you know, like, I think that overall, it just seems like, I guess, Central and South America, they seem to have this approach where they say, okay, who are the people that we want to bring in the country? It's people who, you know, have got money, who don't have criminal records, and who are able to actually kind of raise the standard of living. Whereas in Europe, it's completely the opposite. I mean, it's very hard to move to Europe. Even if you're an American or a Canadian or something like that, it's quite hard to move to Europe. Yes, you might be able to get some kind of working holiday, but in terms of going there and getting permanent residencies and you know, kind of citizenship and things like that, it's very difficult. And yet Europe has a very, very open door policy. And to other parts of the world where it's not going to raise the standard of living for the people in that country. Because if you bring in people who have lower economic means, unless they're incredibly smart and incredibly entrepreneurial, and they're going to, you know, bring in capital through some kind of business means. Well, just the maths doesn't work out that that's going to have a positive overall impact. So, you know, it's not being like anti-immigration, you know, I think it's just a, that term is a kind of complete misnomer, because it's not about being anti-immigration. It's just being about like having a good immigration policy, you know, saying, okay, correct, what are the things that's actually going to be of benefit? And Europe's gone in a different direction. You know, I genuinely worry for it. And Ireland, almost most of all right now, I think that Ireland is kind of at the center of this, with this the issue with people kind of like coming in and taking over hotels and things like that, and crime rates going through the roof. But why is this happening, Rick? Like, what's actually going on? Why would these policies be enacted, and especially to the degree that we see in places like Ireland?
Well, let's put it, everything should be put in the balance, okay? And, you know, set aside what your beliefs are. Look at what the outcome is for these policies, okay? And I cannot see any, and I mean zero, positive outcomes for these plans that are currently being implemented. And not only have they been in place for some time, but they're getting worse and worse, and the borders are becoming more and more lax. So if you and I were running a country today, let's say we were given the control of Ireland or the control of Mexico, and we said, okay, at the minute, Mexico has a policy, you can't come here unless we can make sure you're not a criminal, you maybe have a few quid to buy a place, or you're going to come and you're going to contribute to the economy, you're going to work, you're going to pay taxes, you're going to do whatever you're going to do, or else you don't get in. Now, let's say you and I said, stuff that, chuck that right out the window. Let's throw the borders open and let anybody come in. No background checks. We don't have anywhere to put them. Doesn't matter. Bring them in anyway. What about the tourist industry? It doesn't matter. We'll stick them in hotels. We'll commission them. We don't have the money to do it. We'll just print the money. We'll push inflation up and so on. How can anyone look at us and say that we're not acting treacherously on behalf of the governments of Ireland or the governments of Mexico because of our actions? Actions speak louder than words. So while the government may say, the Irish government will say, well, we have an obligation, we have a duty, we want to be humanitarians, we want to show love and goodwill and blah, blah, blah. That's all talk, but it doesn't translate into actual action. People are beside themselves with worry here. They are looking down the barrel of complete societal collapse in Ireland at the minute. That's a fact. And they're taking to the streets in more and more numbers and more places. Old women, young mothers and fathers together out marching with their kids. These are not right-wing extremists. These are not balaclava wearing Molotov cocktail toting extremists. These are everyday people that are concerned about their future. So why are they doing it? There's a lot of speculation behind it. Is it a secret UN army that's coming in to take over the country? Is it this? Is it that? I can't say for sure. But what I can say for sure is it's collapsing the country. It's absolutely collapsing the country from within. And the people that are facilitating it know it's collapsing the country from within. They know the public sentiment is universally against them. And they know they're causing damage, but yet they still continue to do it anyway. So the question is why? I suppose it goes back to our first point about the journalists. If you're on someone's payroll, if you're on someone's books, even though you know something may be a lie, you'll print it anyway because you're getting paid. Even though you know something may be against what's good for the people around you, you'll do it anyway because you're on the payroll. And I believe all these so-called leaders and so-called governors or, you know, rulers of the country, the presidents, are all compromised and they're all bought and they're all paid for because they're doing nothing to help the people of their respective countries. In fact, they're actively bringing them down and destroying them and running them into the ground. That's a fact. If you can, I would love to be contradicted. I would love for you to be able to present an argument to me now and say, actually, Rick, no, Ireland's doing better because of all this. It's just your imagination. It's easier to get a house these days. It's easier to buy a property. It's easier to bring your kids up. It's easier to get a place in school. It's easier to find a dentist or a doctor. Well, then I'd say, well, then, Johnny, I've got it all wrong. But you can't do that because that's not the facts. So I'm seeing factually destruction and devastation. And you have to ask yourself the question, why, if these are so-called Irishmen running the government, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, you know, back in the day, Ireland, you know, it's divided into north and south. That happened in 1921. For 100 years, there's been a push to reunify Ireland. And the slogan was always in the north here, Brits out, get the Brits out of Northern Ireland, the British Army, the occupying force. They still want Brits out, but Brits out, Ukrainians in, Somalians in, Nigerians in, fucking Eritreans in, Albanians in, Georgians in, you name it. Everybody in, but get the Brits out. So it's just, it's crazy, my friend. It's absolutely crazy, but that's the country in which I live in at the minute.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things that really concerns me as well is, as you've got this kind of conflict going on in the Middle East and, you know, between Israel and previously, you know, just Palestine, but now we've got Iran coming into that as well. Just how that's going to affect the kind of Muslim communities that have been brought in. You know, like, we now have a lot of kind of young, quite radicalized Muslims in the United Kingdom. And, you know, I hope that that won't turn into anything, but I worry that if something happened in terms of that war, like if the UK got involved in that war, and as you know, I'm not sure what your views on this are, Rick, but you know, we seem to be just like salivating at the idea of any war that we can go into. The UK seems to just be immediately saying, okay, well, like, we'll join whatever war. So if this really starts to kind of decline even more in terms of what's going on in Iran especially, and we go to war there, are you going to have a civil war in the United Kingdom? Are you going to have a civil war in, you know, countries in kind of like Northern Europe especially? Because that could happen. I don't, you know, I mean, you could have people who are out in support of the kind of Muslim world, quote unquote, who are radicalized, who are willing to, you know, go to arms within the countries that they've been brought into. Like, I really worry that this kind of cultural divide could escalate at some point. And, you know, hopefully it won't. I like to believe that it won't happen. But, you know, you have such a mismatch of ideologies that could potentially erupt. You know, I always kind of think that when it comes to immigration stuff, as well as having sound immigration, it needs to be kind of somewhat slow, so that there's enough time for like proper integration. And I think that has happened with previous generations. I mean, you know, even the kind of like Windrush generation, things like that, they're very well kind of ingrained, whereas it's happening so fast now that there hasn't been that kind of cultural integration. And then if you have a war that suddenly everyone's really heated and ideologically charged, what's going to happen with that? You know, I think that all of these things are concerns for Europe especially.
Okay, I'm a big believer in looking at trajectories. Okay, look at the trajectory that we're on. Look, you know, when you throw a stone, you can gauge roughly where it's going to land based on the angle in which you throw it, the speed at which you throw it, the arc that you can see it cutting through the air. You have a reasonable idea where that stone is going to land. Is that a fair point? Yeah. You can gauge a trajectory based on certain factors, observable factors. This business of the potential for civil war, is it there? 100%. And the tensions are rising. People say, oh, no, they're not. You're imagining. Tensions are rising. The amount of division, wedges that are being driven between so many different sections of society, it's off the scale. It's very, very difficult to keep up with at the minute. And using this as our conversation today as a yardstick against the conversation we had 18 months ago, September 2022, the things that we discussed back then, if we go back with the benefit of hindsight and realistically evaluate how have things progressed since then, everything's got worse, all right, to the extent that there are now more conflicts that we're discussing today than we did back in September of 2022. The immigration issue today in May, April 2024 is worse than it was back in September of 2022. The push towards digital identity is harder now than it was back in 2022. The move towards the implementation of CBDCs and extra censorship at the minute is worse than it was back in 2022. So based on those factors, this is reality, not just my perception, based on that trajectory, And the increasing tension that people are feeling, mix that in with all the distractions that we talked about, the decline in mental health, the lack of attention because of excessive social media use, bombardment morning, noon and night with negative messages. You said you had to struggle to find some positivity there. You switch on your social media account in the morning, you'll probably see someone setting themselves on fire. You'll see a child being ruthlessly beaten by a gang of people in a school. You'll see someone having their brains bashed in the concrete. You'll see the police shooting people dead. You'll see all sorts of horror and heinous attacks that have a cumulative effect of running us down, weakening us and filling us with despair and despondency. Factor that in with cost of living, and I can't talk for Mexico, but over here, despite what the government's saying, it's not getting any cheaper. Rents are not going down. Interest rates, you know, they're not really going down. The price of houses at the minute are not going down. Wages are not going up. The price of consumables day to day is going up. So that all has a cumulative effect as well. Over time, it's making people more tense, making people more frustrated, making people more hacked off. And I suppose if you want a movie analogy for it, if you've ever seen that film, and I've only seen it once when it came out, Falling Down with Michael Douglas in it, it's about this dude who has a day job and he just reaches the end of his tether and he snaps and he goes off the rails at some point. I think that's the direction we're going in as a society in general, unless we take steps to preserve our mental health or physical health or spiritual health by disconnecting from a lot of things and focusing on the things that we can control rather than the things that we can't. So is there a possibility for those things you described? 100%. Is it definitely going to happen? No, we can't say that for sure. But based on the trajectory that we're on, we're certainly closer to it happening than it not happening at the minute, in my humble opinion.
Mm. So you mentioned, Rick, about, you know, the spiritual effect it was having on people. And obviously, like the first conversation we had, it was definitely very spiritual. We talked a lot about kind of prophecy and God and and Christianity and how all this fit in. And I'm interested to know, kind of given the time that's passed in the past 18 months, how you see that all fitting into how the world looks now. Has it kind of confirmed and reinforced your views that we are living through the end times? Or, you know, perhaps have you changed your mind on that? I'm just interested to get your
current views. No, I haven't changed my mind on it at all. Again, with the benefit of reflection, all the things we talked about in September of 2022 have all progressed further along the road now that we're into April of 2023. Take the transhumanism side of things, for example. That's something we talked about the last time. Now, Neuralink implants are a thing. Not that brain implants are a new thing, but they're being put forward as a way to heal the sick and make the lame walk and make the blind see. And that's how they're being marketed. Like with everything else that's bad for you, it's going to have to be marketed in a positive way. The reality is, you know, is that Elon Musk's motive? Does he want to help the blind to see? Does he want to help the lame to walk? When he bought Twitter, was it to put a town square back out there for freedom of speech? No. In his own words, he said, me buying Twitter is simply an accelerant to developing the X app, the all-encompassing app. And of course, since then, he's rebranded Twitter as X, and he's, you know, monetizing things a lot more now. He wants to take put transactions in there the same way you can do with PayPal. He's trying to suck more people into that platform, giving out free blue tick accounts now. I even got one of them, and I'm critical of the guy. Why? To suck you further into that. And if he's modeling it on the WeChat app, which is available in China, everything happens there. Your banking's done on there, your social media's on there, your communication's on there. They monitor everything that you do on there. He's moving towards that model. So there's a lot of things, I believe, and it's not something that happens overnight. I believe we're on a path, we're on a trajectory. And a lot of people, I don't care if people disagree with me. I'm not trying to convince them that I'm right. I might be wrong about all of this, and I hope I am. I hope I am, but nothing can change what I see, and nothing can change what I perceive. And when I hear from people, and I'm talking to people all around the world on a daily basis, and have been doing for the last 2 years and 3 months, 5 days a week, pretty much 50 weeks a year, Johnny, the stories are all happening at the same time and in the same way in lockstep. That's not a coincidence. That's an orchestrated effort to bring things down or to bring in a new world order. And I believe, you know, yeah, we're seeing a few victories here and there, but, you know, it's a war we're in here. You're going to win some battles in a war. The outcome is not fixed as per now, but based on what I can see and with the benefit of reflection and what we talked about last time, I'm not seeing any improvements at all.
So is the New World Order essentially just a synonym for the biblical end times? Are they in your view the same event?
No, biblical end times, according to the Bible, started 2,000 years ago. Okay, so to say that these are the end times as described by the Bible, you know, if you read the book of Hebrews chapter 1, it says in these last days, you know, so that was written 2,000 odd years ago. And again, I know there's going to be people listening going, oh, he believes in the Bible, he thinks it's a God up there and the devil and all this. I don't care if you believe in it or not. I have long passed the point of giving a damn what anybody thinks about what I think. All that's important to me today is what I think and what I believe based on my experience. And maybe this will resonate with some of your listeners. If it, you don't agree with it or it goes over your head, I won't fall out with you if you think I'm a raving lunatic. But where does this all fit in? Listen, read Matthew's Gospel, read the Gospels, read the book of Revelation. It's all falling into place. It'll all ultimately manifest in a new world order has to come in. The Antichrist beast system has to be established in the earth. And the classic example of it is that the mark of the beast must be taken either in your forehead or in your right hand. Without that mark, no man, no matter who you are, no matter what your position is, can buy or sell or trade lest he receive the mark. And again, who knows exactly what shape and form that will take, but we are moving towards that beast system as we speak. And in fact, before I came on with you today, I went out, I had a cup of coffee, I had a walk, I listened back to the last podcast we did, and the snippet that you take to introduce me in the last Staying Free podcast, it's like a 30 second clip. Go back and listen to it again. We've moved closer to that happening since the last time we spoke. So, yes, I do believe we're inching our way towards that. Exactly when it will manifest the way that I'm saying it will, I don't know that, but I know we're closer to it today than we were back in 2022.
I hesitate to agree with you, actually, Rick. I'm not entirely sure.
Listen. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I've got it wrong. I hope I'm crazy, Johnny. I hope I'm a nutter. I hope I've misinterpreted everything. I'll be happy to be wrong about this.
Wait, when I say I hesitate to agree, I don't know. I might have got that term wrong. Is hesitate to agree means you do agree or you don't agree?
No, I absolutely believe this is going to happen. I'm convinced of this. Whether or not I'm the only person that actually believes this, like I said, is neither here nor there. Another trap we fall into is getting too worried about what other people believe. Mm. So you will have views on certain things that I may disagree with, and I will have views on certain things that you may disagree with. But what good is it for me to fall out with you or get into a row with you or get into a shouting match about you or trying to invest a lot of my time and energy making you believe what I believe? It doesn't profit you. And it doesn't profit me. And I suppose, like I said, with the benefit of hindsight, and I'm really analysing a lot of stuff now, your two resources that you can control in your day-to-day life is time and energy. You may not be able to control the economy. You may not be able to control the rise of the New World Order. You may not be able to control the manifestation of the Antichrist, whether you believe in him or not. But what you can control is your time and your energy. What do you invest your time into? What do you invest your energy into? So if I come on a podcast like this, for example, and you ask me a question, I'll give you an answer. Mm-hmm. I don't have to, and this is not directed at you specifically, but I don't have to justify what I believe to anyone. If I wanted to justify it, it would take 10 or 15 or 20 hours. I don't want to say it, and you certainly don't want to listen to it. It's just a position that I've arrived at.
I would. I'd do the 20-hour marathon with you, Rick.
Be careful what you ask for. But the point that I'm trying to make is, listen, I'll be 51 in July, okay? And as you do get a little bit older, you do realize that time is a more and more precious commodity. When you're 20, you think you're going to live forever. When you're 30, you think, I'm getting a little bit older, but at least I'm not 40. And then when you hit 40, you think, well, I'm just about middle-aged. And then all of a sudden, you're 50, and then you're 51. And then I'm thinking, you know, 9 years from now, I'll be 60 years of age. And if the Bible's correct, it says the days of our years are 70. And if by reason of strength they be 80, they'll be filled with sorrow. In other words, you're 80, you're an octogenarian, you're a wizened old man, you've got health issues, you can't see too good, you can't walk too good. I'm at the tail end of that now. So I suppose I'm taking stock of life. I'm looking around me, and what I believe in, I'm trying to prepare for accordingly. If someone asks me a question, I'll give them an answer. If the world disagrees with me, I don't care, and I'm not going to invest time and energy convincing them I'm right, but I'll simply, maybe somebody will say, hang on, he's making a point. I'll look into that a little bit more detail. Or like you just said, you know, I'm hesitant to agree with you, but when I think about what we talked about in 2022, it does, you do kind of have a point. Great.
Yeah.
Examine it further and see what conclusion you come to. It may be the same, it may be different, but either way, I don't think we're going to fall out about it, are we?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I think that for me, 2020 and 2021, there was probably two things that in my mind were really highlighted by that area that suddenly I was like, okay, I'm understanding it more. One was what happened in kind of 1930s Germany, which was, you know, previously had never made any sense to me. It was just like, okay, that whole event is just so, I can't understand the mentality of people. I can't understand how people were kind of like brought into this, I guess this kind of like cult, you know, they kind of became part of this spell was cast upon society. And I'd seen documentaries about it. I'd really tried to understand it. And I was like, I just don't get it. How can people, you know, turn against their neighbor, put people in camps, all this kind of stuff. And then 2020 happened. And I was like, ah, okay. I can see the mechanisms now for it happening. And the other thing that kind of became obvious to me was this kind of like personal battle between good and evil that each of us has. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, and I've never been a religious person. As I said to you in our last one, I went to a Church of England school. It was mildly religious. It wasn't, you know, most people were not kind of like really deep into religion in that school. And but the other thing that did become kind of clear to me is that whether or not you put a kind of Christian bent on it or any kind of religious bent on it, there seems to be some kind of a process the individual has to go through, which is that you are faced with, do I align myself with truth, or do I kind of swallow a convenient lie to make my life easier or more comfortable or to fit in with the crowd? And for I think for a lot of people, COVID was that event. And it's not, and I think that's why it's so significant. You know, like sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, in all my podcast episodes, I end up talking about COVID at some point. And, you know, I don't do it because I necessarily want to, but I do think that it has this huge significance because that was the real kind of black and white moment for, do you go into truth or do you, you know, swallow the lie? And I think that people go through that at various times in their life. Maybe, you know, it's something smaller for them. Maybe that wasn't the big event for them. Maybe it's, you know, some other event that they have to kind of come to terms with. But I think that was the event. And that is something which I think religion and especially Christianity and some of the ideas that you talked about in our last episode, it really speaks to that. It really speaks to this idea that, you know, you have to kind of go on this path of truth. And, you know, in a way, I also see parallels with like Jesus, you know, the story of Jesus of saying, you know, there you don't compromise with truth. You speak the truth even when you're going to be persecuted for it. You don't say, oh no, actually, I'm going to kind of like just follow along with society. Even when you're at the point of persecution, you say, no, I speak the truth and I speak it unapologetically. And, you know, I think that's a process that a lot of people went through then, but it happens at various points through people's lives. And I think that since that happening, I have certainly looked at religion and Christianity in a different light. I think that whether or not you believe specifically each of the stories and how far you go to accept it as truth, it elicits some truth. It communicates some truth that we all face in our life. It's talking about a human condition, which I think that is very, very valuable. So, yeah, when I say to you, I kind of hesitate to agree. I agree with the with a lot of what you're saying in terms of the way that this feels to me, and that we can actually look at that and take lessons from it. You know, what I really like about religion, especially Christianity, is it kind of primes us for these times in our life. Because otherwise, if you have no priming, if you don't have any kind of an understanding about these, I guess about the that human condition that you're going to go through, you face this thing and you just kind of like fall at the first hurdle. You know, you just kind of like fold up like a deck chair and say, oh, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and take the vaccine, whatever. I don't really believe it, but whatever. And I think that religion, especially Christianity, it has a very, very kind of solid focus on truth and kind of like honesty and like following that authentic path of truth. And I think that is very, very useful. I think that if you have that primer there, maybe you're able to face these things, I guess, a bit more head on. However, all of that said, I'm not sure that I witnessed from the community, I guess the Christian community, or really any religious community, much in the way of resistance to this stuff. You know, I didn't see all of the church saying, no, we're going to stay open, or the mosques or the synagogues or anything. You know, it seemed to me that there was a lot of capitulation when it came to organized religion, at least. So what do you think about that, Rick?
Well, I think a line was drawn in the sand in 2020. And COVID, questioning, you know, the existence of COVID, the whole scandemic, the whole shooting match. One thing for sure, that a line, I believe, was drawn in the sand in 2020. And now we've passed that. I don't think personally there's any going back to the way things used to be in the good old days, if there ever were any good old days. I think we're on a, what happened in 2020 has accelerated this business that we're talking about, in my opinion, the ushering in of a new world order, which will ultimately manifest in the second advent of the second coming of Jesus Christ to establish his kingdom on earth. And as crazy as that may sound to most people, it's something I believe in with all my heart. Now, one thing I will ask you to ask yourself is, if you're questioning it, says, well, me, this guy seems reasonably switched on about a lot of issues. He seems to talk a little bit of sense here and there. Why would he believe in such a fantastical story with all his heart, soul, and mind? And maybe there's something in it somewhere. Maybe it's something I should give a little bit of consideration to. And that goes back to the long conversation that you claim that you want to have with me. There's of course a reason behind that. Or maybe I'm just a raving lunatic. But either way, I encourage people to seek. The Bible says, seek and you shall find, knock it and it shall be opened unto you. So we need to be active in our seeking. And in terms of the church thing's very interesting. The complete lack of resistance from the so-called church, whether that be the Roman Catholic Church, the Protestant Evangelical Church, the synagogues, the mosques, all closing down together. I said this, I think, the last time we spoke. Evil is nothing new. Wars are nothing new. Corruption is nothing new. The one thing that differentiates this period, in my opinion, from any other period before is this lockstep business. So I'm talking to you in Mexico. I can have a conversation with Mike in Poland. I can talk to my friend Rob Hutchinson in South Africa. I can talk to Jesse Smith in Texas now, currently in Mexico. I can talk to people in the UK and Ireland. They'll all say the same thing. We're seeing this where we are. We're seeing this happening with our government. It's the lockstep, the ushering in, the working together of the forces of evil, working together to bring this new world order in. So you can't say, well, that whole continent isn't playing ball. That whole continent's not playing ball. It's picking up momentum and it's working in lockstep at the minute. And ironically, the thing was, that's probably the only time religions have been united over the last 3 years, is their unity in lack of resistance to the draconian measures that were forced on them. Never in history before. During the Blitz in World War II, churches never closed, schools never closed down, mosques never closed down, the world over. In Saudi Arabia, the mosques were closed. In Africa, the churches were closed. In Italy, the chapels were closed. Something a little bit sus about that, don't you think? That they were all moving in lockstep together to bring about the totalitarianism and the lockdowns that we saw, Johnny. So that's the key giveaway for me as well. The fact that this is happening lockstep on a global stage rather than in isolated pockets, with one religion doing it, the other one's not. This country's doing it, the other one's not. With a few outliers, like Sweden, for example, during the lockdowns, the world lockdown, okay, pretty much. And with a few outliers in terms of border control, like Mexico or Hungary, the world is opening up their borders. In terms of transgender ideology, the world is opening up to that. In terms of, you name it, the world is becoming receptive to these counterproductive ideals and narratives, and that's why another reason why I think the way that I do. I'm not even sure if that even answers a question, or even if you ask me that question. Like I said, I'm just talking off the top of my head, and I so apologies if it comes across as a jumble.
No, it does, and I think that's it's something that is noticeable. I do wonder whether previous periods have thought the same thing. You know, I wonder whether in kind of like the 1930s, they also, you know, I don't know. I guess this is something that we could actually find out. You know, were people kind of screaming from the hilltop saying, you know, this is the second coming, this is the end times?
That's not, this isn't anything new. I mean, like, people have been predicting the end times for thousands of years, and they've been getting it all wrong. And that's why I'm saying, I'm putting a caveat in here. Maybe I've overanalyzed this. Maybe I'm looking too far into this. Maybe I'm just going too far off the rails in this one. Maybe I've got this one all wrong. I'm not saying, don't rely on me as being the definitive source whether or not this is ushering in the end or the last of the last days. It has happened before. You don't need to research it. It has happened before. Many people have called this in the past, have been completely wrong about it. I don't know. Call it spiritual discernment. Call it something deep down inside. And a lot of people of my persuasion are thinking the same way. Yeah, it's lining up, and it's not lining up for the best. And if you dig through that old podcast of yours from, I don't have my Bible to hand here, shame on me, but I quoted some scriptures and some verses in that one that outlines why I believe we're on this path that we're on at the minute, and it's unique. But again, that's just my interpretation. That's just my viewpoint in this. I could be horribly wrong about it. Don't take my word for it.
Yeah, I'm just pulling up actually, because if people are listening and they want to know which episode that is, it would be good to be able to direct them
I'll
to it.
I'll tell you which episode it is.
So that was episode 37, if people want to go back and check it out. Definitely worth it.
You want to inflict that upon yourself.
What's that?
If you want to inflict that pain and suffering on yourself, go back and listen to Staying Free podcast episode 37.
That was a great one, actually. It was quite a pivotal one for me because, it boomed, you know. I was that episode compared to all the ones previous to it, it like got a lot of listeners. People really got something out of that. I think people are getting a lot out of these ideas generally, to be honest, Rick. I think there's been a reemergence. People are kind of like reevaluating some of these ideas, the Bible, traditional Christianity especially. I don't know, maybe it's happening with other religions as well. You know, I don't know whether they're also, you know, I don't know whether the kind of Muslim community or whatever are also kind of saying, you know, this was all in the scripture. Perhaps they are, perhaps they aren't. But I definitely think that a lot of people in the West now are revisiting this and saying, okay, is there something here? And and I've always thought that there was something there, but I'm definitely seeing it more and more that, you know, it does really speak to what's going on in the world. I mean, I guess on an individual level and on a collective level in terms of the events we see as well. So yeah, I think it was a great episode, and, you know, people should go and check it out.
Oh yeah.
Just moving onto something, you know, a little more kind of in terms of like what you're doing and in your own life, like how are you preparing? Cause I know that you talk to Mike a lot, by the way, you know, really great to hear those episodes. I'm glad that you and Mike have kind of struck up a relationship. Cause I remember when, like, back in the day, I said to you, you've got to speak to this guy, Parallel Mike. You know, at that point, I don't think he had a particularly big following, but I think that he is a very, you know, he's someone who I think is going to be a big voice in this kind of like epoch that we're going into. And, you know, I'm not sure whether he's even kind of aware of it yet, that I think that he's speaking. Yeah. He's got a lot of good things to say. He's really kind of like living by his word as well. And, you know, I think that he can be, I don't necessarily like to say leaders because there is a negative stigma there, but, you know, it's just someone who can kind of impart wisdom, who's kind of really lived it. Yeah. You know, it's not going to come from the, you know, the Andrew Tates and these kind of people who people are like, oh yeah, that's the person who's gonna lead the resistance. No, not at all. It's gonna come from like individuals who are just like have genuine wisdom, have a sense of spirituality, have a sense of connection, and are doing things in accordance with their word, you know?
I think guiding light's a good word to use, say for example, for Mike. And by that what I mean is, you know, where I live, I moved about a year ago down towards the coast, and I'm finding it very beneficial being in the area that I'm in. And one of the things that I do is I go out for a walk at night, about 2 miles, 3 miles drive from where I live. There's a beautiful piece of coast, and I drive down there and go for a big walk up and down the beach. And one particular point that I stand in every night, I can see two lighthouses, one far over to my right, one far over to my left, separated by a big expanse of sea. Now, a lighthouse is a warning vessel or structure. When you see that lighthouse, it usually signals that there's danger in that area, that there's rocks in that area. So if you're a ship and you're navigating the sea and you're not familiar with that area, take it as a warning. The lighthouse won't save you. Okay, the lighthouse is simply warning you, don't come here or proceed with caution. Okay, so I agree with you. I wouldn't say Mike's a very humble guy. I love him to bits. But definitely he has wisdom, I would say, beyond his years. And he's walking the walk. He's not just talking the talk. So maybe a guiding light or a lighthouse. And again, you know, don't put too much weight behind what anybody says or does. But certainly siphon out the wheat and the chaff. And again, back to our original point. There's such a dearth of genuine, honest to God, uncompromised, investigative journalists out there. The same with people with a little bit of wisdom and financial savvy, or who can maybe guide you towards living a more, you know, healthier lifestyle. I know you're into your health and fitness, as is Mike as well. So, you know, do you want to be taking health advice from some fat slob, or do you want to be taking it from someone who's actually taking care of their body? Do you want to take financial advice from someone who's just frittered away everything and they have no clue what they're doing, or somebody that actually has done a little bit of research into this? Do you want to take advice and living sustainably off the land from somebody with their own farm, who grows their own vegetables, who lives in the woodlands, who harvests their own water, and so on and so forth? Or do you want to take it from somebody who does a little bit of internet research? So I take your point on that. And I would look at certain people as guiding lights, somebody with a little bit of wisdom who's walked the walk and not just talked the talk. And, you know, you're in that category too. And Mike's in that category. There's a handful of people in there that I would look to and say, yeah, I take what that guy says seriously, or I look at that one and go, no, mute them or block. I don't want to have their influence going into my ears, eyes, or any other part of my body for that matter.
And in terms of your life then, Rick, I know that you've mentioned on TNT that you were homeschooling your daughter. I'm not sure if that's still something you're doing, or if she's beyond school years, but
she got through her exams. Yeah, she is she's 18 now, and she's doing other things now, but thankfully she got through the whole school thing. The whole school thing was extremely traumatic for her at the time. On top of all the lockdown stuff, there was other things going on, and we just felt it was best to pull her out. And she was dedicated enough and smart enough and well advanced enough that she applied herself, and she got through the exams that she needed to get through to get herself a place in college. And she's turning on with her life now. And again, there was people that I had on the show, one woman in particular, Sarah Plumley. If anybody's listening to this show today, and no matter where you are in the world, she has a fantastic online teaching academy called Guerrilla, G-U-E-R-I-L-L-A, Guerrilla Education. Sarah Plumley, check out her Substack, sarahplumley.substack.com. She's got an incredible academy of online teaching that so many parents have enrolled in on a step-by-step. She's a mathematics wizard. She advocates for musicianship and, you know, critical thinking, the whole shooting match. She was great too. She reached out to me, and you know, she was helpful as well with my daughter too. Again, a connection that I made through being online on that accursed Twitter platform, another positive outcome from it too.
That's awesome. That's really great that you you know, that you pulled her out and kind of successfully just continue to educate on at home. I mean, I think this is something that a lot of people are kind of coming to now. It's just the idea of, like, homeschooling has become so much less stigmatized, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that it's just one of many things that you can do to kind of take more self-sovereignty, you know, in terms of, like, thankfully we live in a world where it is still possible to self-educate at home. I know that there's some countries that have tried to ban it. I think in France, either they're trying to ban it or they have already banned it and things like that. But, you know, it's great that you did that. And what about in other areas of your life, Rick, you know, when it comes to, I guess other areas that you're taking self-sovereignty or other things that you're doing to kind of keep yourself sane? I know that at the end of your videos, you always give a message to your viewers to stay sane. So how do you stay sane?
Progressively, by spending less and less time online, I think for me personally, that's the key. Okay, the more time, have you ever seen the film Apocalypse Now?
I don't know if I have, actually. I don't think so.
Right, well, you need to go and watch it, okay? Go and watch it. Apocalypse Now, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. But there's a great scene at the very start of that movie. In fact, if you only watch the first 3 minutes of that movie, go and watch them, okay? So bottom line is there's an army assassin played by Martin Sheen called Captain Willard. And he is in Vietnam and he's waiting for a mission. Okay, he doesn't know what that mission's going to be. It turns out he has to go upriver and assassinate a rogue American army colonel who set up his own outpost, and he's got his own little group of followers. Okay, sounds a lot like what's going on in the world right now. He has to be eliminated. So at the beginning of the movie, Willard is in his hotel room waiting for a knock on the door. He doesn't know when it's going to come and he doesn't know what it's going to involve, but he knows he's going to get a knock on the door. So to kill time, he starts to drink and he's doing stuff in his hotel room, and he has this monologue that he says, but it's in his head. And one of the things he says is, every day that I'm in this hotel room, I'm getting weaker and weaker. And every day that Charlie or the Viet Cong are in the bush, squatting in the bush is the words that he used, they're getting stronger and stronger. So I believe that as much as possible, personally speaking, I'm trying to breathe as much fresh air as I can. I'm trying to expose myself to as much natural light as I can. I'm trying to remove all negative stimuli from my life as I can. That includes people and it includes things. I'm trying to prune them all away as much as possible. I'm trying to read books, more physical books, than looking at stuff online. I used to play guitar a lot. I was obsessed with it from about the age of 14 until about the age of 30-ish. Every day for 16 years I used to practice. That's fell by the wayside again. I'm thinking about getting myself a new acoustic guitar and picking up guitar again. Anything I can, being more creative, watching more classic movies, stuff that provokes thought, watching Apocalypse Now, watching stuff with depth, stuff with a script, stuff with proper actors, stuff with good stuff and it's stimulus and stuff, provocative stuff to try and keep me there. And I'm a little bit antisocial. I believe, you know, it's better to have a handful of close friends than dozens and dozens of acquaintances. So I limit my contact with people as much as possible. That's just me. I'm quite antisocial. I don't say everybody should be doing that, but it's helping me to preserve my sanity because I have to immerse myself in all this crap as part of the job that I do. So to counterbalance that, when I'm not on air doing stuff like this, which I don't do a lot of, I'm out there looking at the sea, listening to the waves, listening to some good, quiet, relaxing music, reading a good book somewhere, or sitting, sipping a coffee on my own with my headphones in so I don't listen to the Indian chatter of the people around me talking absolute shite about what's going on in their life to try and preserve my own sanity. That's my top tips for success. Take them or leave them.
Yeah, that's really good. And, you know, obviously, I do appreciate you coming on here and giving me so much of your time, because as you said, I know that you are talking about, you know, this kind of stuff every day, and that, as you said, outside of it, you want to be doing stuff more positive. So, you know, I appreciate you kind of giving me all this time.
This has been different, but let me cut you. This has been different. I don't feel this is a conversation like the conversations that I have when I'm on air, because when I'm on air, it's live. I'm speaking to four guests a day. Yeah. We're talking about geopolitical issues. We're talking about finance. We're talking about this, and this. Mm. This hasn't been anything like that. You've been asking the questions, which is nice. And I've been freely giving my answers, which is nice. And hopefully my prayer and belief is that someone, at least one person somewhere, will take a little bit of what's been said today and apply it to their life, and it moves them forward an inch. That's my hope and belief. So it hasn't been the same as what I normally do. This is different. Mm-hmm. I look at this as something a little bit different, and I actually appreciate the invite and appreciate being able to come back on and talk to you again today.
Yeah, well, you know, I like doing things this way as well. And I like these kind of like long form episodes. I think that they're really useful, and you know, having you on, having like all these other guests on, I just think that it just kind of brings people onto this platform. I try to get a different side to people as well that you don't necessarily get from, like, you know, for example, on TNT, like you said, it's a totally different form. So, you know, it's really good. I think that podcasting is an awesome format, and even just like the relationships that I've been able to build through doing it, you know, with people like you, people like Mike. You know, I've made a bunch of kind of like close friends now from doing this kind of thing, who I really respect And, you know, it's a huge opportunity, I think. I mean, anyone who's thinking about doing kind of content creation and stuff, don't just think about it in terms of, oh, I'm going to get this many listens or this many likes. It's actually about like the connections you build along the way. And, you know, yeah. I just want to say thank you to you as well for really supporting me. Because I know, you know, you sent me, for the sake of my listeners who wouldn't have known this because it was a private message, you know, you sent me a really supportive message like quite early on. I think it was either before or shortly after we'd done our conversation, just kind of giving me a lot of encouragement to kind of keep going and stuff. And, you know, that was in the early days and the podcast has come on quite a lot since then. And, you know, I really appreciated that support. It meant a lot from yourself. And, you know, I'm really glad to have kind of had this second conversation. It won't be the last. Hopefully we'll have another one. Maybe won't leave it 2 years this time. But yeah, I look forward to kind of continuing to evolve this conversation stuff. And, you know, I definitely think that people out there, you know, they want to hear what you have to say. And, you know, you're an important person. Just like I said about Mike, you know, you are kind of giving people a dose of sanity. And these videos during COVID were really, really important to people. And I think that's continued. I'm really glad to see that you're doing stuff with TNT and that you've kind of continued on this mission. Because I definitely think that, you know, the mission has chosen you and you've stepped up to the role. So thanks for everything you do.
You're welcome. Appreciate your time today, Johnny, and the opportunity to talk to you again. Appreciate it.
All right, Rick, I guess we'll leave it there. Yeah, it's been an awesome conversation. If you just want to let people know, actually, just before we sign things off, just where they can find you. And if you have another parting message for my audience, feel free to share that. But yeah, thanks again for coming on.
Okay, well, yeah, if you want to connect, if you want to connect with me, you can do so on the Twitter X platform. Just search No Risk, No Reward, or check out the website tntradio.live. And there's a schedule on there. Just look for my face or my name, Rick Munn. And I'm on Monday through Friday at the minute from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. UK time. The shifts change around sometimes, but by and large, you'll get me in the mornings, UK time, Monday through Friday. Pretty much every week. So that's where you can hook up with me.
Awesome. All right. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Welcome.